Welcome back to Edible Ocean Podcast, Season 2, Episode 2. Today, Professor Tony talks with Megan Sorby, an aquaculturist who specializes in redfish. She's going to tell us all about her operation and some really interesting technological developments in the industry. Okay, without any further ado, here we go. Megan Sorby interviewed, of course, as usual, by Professor Tony Winson.
Well, hello. Today we're really pleased to talk with Megan Sorby about recirculating aquaculture systems, or RAS, R-A-S, a new technology for raising finfish, but instead of in the ocean, as with traditional salmon farming, for example, this system involves raising finfish on land in specially designed facilities using an array of technologies. So, let's pass it over to Megan.
Thanks, Tony. It's so nice to be here, and thank you for including us on your podcast. My name is Megan Sorby. I'm a co-founder and the CEO of Pine Island Redfish, which is a new recirculating aquaculture development in Southwest Florida, growing redfish, or more familiar, red drum, in land-based recirculating systems. I've been in the aquaculture sector for just about a little less than 20 years now, culturing always marine species, but mostly in land-based systems and employing new techniques to enhance the aquaculture process. So I'm happy to be here, and thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Megan, on our second season of the Edible Oceans podcast. So I have a number of questions, of course, for you, and I just thought it might be useful to begin with this one. Now, recirculating aquaculture systems for farming marine species is gaining popularity in the seafood industry. I'm wondering if you could give us, in fairly basic terms for a general audience, an idea of what is entailed with this relatively new technology.
Sure. The biggest misconception, I think, that we want to dispel as aquaculturists or fish farmers is that all of this technology is brand new. It's not. It's just being employed in a way that's different. A lot of the components of a recirculating aquaculture system have been in use in different applications for over a century, and mostly in wastewater treatment facilities. And that's really what recirculating aquaculture is about. It's about utilizing your water resource in the most efficient way possible by reusing it. So when you have a culture tank of fish, whether that's marine or freshwater, the basic steps of a RAS system are the same. You have some mechanism for solid filtration, so taking out the waste components of coming from the fish culture process, namely fish poop. and that is usually through a drum or disc filter. Sometimes there are other types of solid filters that can be used on smaller systems. Subsequent to that, there's what we call a biofilter. And this is something that you see employed in all municipal wastewater treatment facilities. And this is what takes the most care and concentration in maintaining, because it is truly a living filter. So it is acting much like your garden soil, where it is going through that nitrogen cycle. So I want to get everybody to rewind for a second and think about their high school chemistry and biology courses, where they're thinking about the breakdown of nitrogen. So obviously some components of fish waste are ammonia. We break that down from ammonia to nitrite, nitrite to nitrate. And that process is all happening in this biofilter, which has media in it. Usually that's made of small plastic beads that kind of look like dry pasta noodles. And that bacteria colonizes on that media and gives it a surface area to cling to, so that as these dissolved constituents of the water are passed through that filter, the bacteria can break them down. It's a food source for them. So that's step number two. Subsequent to that, The water is pretty well clean, but what we do is then put it through some additional steps that may vary between fresh and salt water, but there is foam fractionation, which sounds big and scary, but it's really just passing air in a counter current to the flow of the water, which allows any fats and oils that are maybe coming from the feed to flocculate up and be removed from the system. But also, this is a point where we sterilize the water before it goes back to the fish as well. So that's either done by ozone or UV. And that allows the water to be very clean before we recirculate it back to the fish. Now, in this process, there's a small amount of water that's constantly leaving the system, and that allows us to put new water, whether that's salt water or fresh water, into the system. And that's that little bit of exchange that just helps keep the system healthy and keeps fresh or new water coming in to keep the system running properly. So that's the basic breakdown of what happens in the process. And like I said, each of those components, if you look at their historical uses in other applications, they're really quite long-lived and a very well-understood process. We're just applying it in a new way.
Oh, well, thank you very much. That's really clear. So you, in a sense, in part at least, you're adapting an old technology to a new application.
Yes, that's exactly right. Exactly right.
Okay. Well, fish farming, you know, as has traditionally been carried on, is in the open ocean. And that has been subject to a good deal of criticism, particularly in the case of salmon farming, for its impact on marine ecology, among other things. Generally speaking, though, what do you see as the key advantages of the RAS method of growing fish compared to farming fish in the open ocean?
Sure. I think this is a great question. And in support of aquaculture in general, I would say that with our seafood deficit globally, we're going to need all types of farming and into the future. It just means that we need to be very precise and clear about where we use certain types of technology to complete the farming process in the right location. So there are certain areas where a net pen may be a better use of resources and a more efficient process. In certain areas, land-based may be the best application. Certainly, the biggest demands for a land-based system are the space, the available land space, but also the infrastructure requirements to support that facility, such as energy. The big advantages, I think, to RAS in certain applications or in certain areas where it should be developed are that you can control that growing cycle 365 days a year. So you're holding that consistent, optimal growing parameters for the species that you're targeting as a constant. I think that's number one advantage. Number two is that you have optimal control. That optimization of control over that process allows you to realize many of the efficiencies that can come with controlled food space farming. Much like greenhouses, this is the greenhouse for fish, right? So we're controlling those parameters, but also realizing those economic efficiencies so that we can achieve that growth and that food production in a way that makes economic sense. Likewise, we can control and collect the waste components of that process and use them in different ways, which I think is an area of our sector that we are poised to see the most amount of growth. We have a very nutrient-rich waste stream that comes from both freshwater and saltwater RAS systems, and there is a plethora of opportunity of how we can recycle that waste and look at aquaculture and specifically RAS aquaculture as a more regenerative farming process than we have potentially viewed it before. You know, to give some examples, they're finding ways that we can cut the waste stream from marine RAS facilities in with conventional manure from agriculture and land apply it, mitigating the concern with high salt in that fish manure. Likewise, trimmings from fish are being used as fertilizer, but also as alternatives to wild harvested bait. But also, I think some areas where that are really new and interesting include the concentration of the waste stream and utilizing it in anaerobic digestion, which can really highlight some of the ways that we can make a high value product out of that waste stream. So I think there are multiple advantages, but it's also, as you so correctly highlighted, it's still a newer industry, and we have lots of opportunity for growth.
Yeah, I mean, you've touched on some very interesting things. For instance, the idea that you can use some of the trimmings for bait. I think traditionally you use smaller fish for bait in, say, the lobster industry, and those smaller fish like herring are disappearing at an alarming rate. So really, this would be, I think, very valuable if you could repurpose the trimmings or whatever that might, I don't know where they would typically go, but if they could be used by fishermen for bait, that'd be great.
We've always been quite good at recycling the trimmings part of our process, whether that is for pet food products or other organic fertilizers. But certainly there are other areas out there, like the fishing industry, where we could explore synergies, and we're really excited to do that.
Well, just looking at the other side of the coin, now with any new technology, there are bound to be some downsides to it, right? So I'd like to ask you what you think might be the biggest challenges facing RAS operations, generally speaking anyway, at this point in their development.
We don't like the word challenges.
Yeah, neither do I.
we like the word opportunities.
Oh, okay.
Globally, we are facing a very interesting time in many respects, but particularly around our food production systems. And certainly, aquaculture of all types presents an opportunity to solve a lot of those issues. But as you rightly point out, it's not a cure-all. We still have a lot of room to make our process better. And certainly in the age of podcasts and 24/7 news cycle, we are probably under a higher level of scrutiny than previous domestication processes of our farmed animals. So what that pushes us to do is to be as efficient as we can be in finding solutions and finding sustainable methods for achieving our food production goals. So I think that's the opportunity that we have as the aquaculture industry in general. Certainly for RAS, there are a few key points that are opportunities that we have to find solutions for. One is that RAS is very energy intensive. It's probably the biggest challenge we have in terms of making the entire process sustainable, both environmentally, but also economically, you know, producing that fish to your plate for a reasonable cost. That's where we have a lot of opportunity in terms of proper siting of our facilities, perhaps where solar panels mm-hmm. can offset a lot of that energy usage by finding design efficiencies where we can reduce or eliminate superfluous bits of equipment. But also, you know, just like what we were talking about with respect to recycling wastes, you know, if we could get a really fine-tuned process of taking a waste stream and turning it into a facility that can use it for anaerobic digestion, what a fantastic opportunity to bring great circularity to our process. So I think that's one. Two is that it's a very capital intensive process. You know, just to start a facility, the capital lift to get something set up is really challenging. And likewise, at least in North America, and I'll speak mostly about the US, but certainly from previous experience in Canada, the university network and nonprofit sector that's out there doesn't always have the business incubation facilities that could help support mm-hmm. commercial demonstration. And that's something that we are working really hard to communicate both to the grant sector and to these facilities specifically as they plan for upgrades and improvements from, you know, 20 years ago when they first started building research units for recirculating aquaculture, is the fact that now we need to have these small scale facilities that can support a new business coming in and saying, hey, I want to test this out. I want to test it in a commercial setting where I can stock things at a certain density, or I am, you know, realizing the actual costs and what those costs look like scaled up can be. So those types of infrastructure supports for businesses could really help mitigate and start to bring down that upfront capital investment. So I think those are two big challenges, but obviously, like I said, you know, we see these as opportunities where we have to educate, where we have to spend time in training both our in-house staff and the groups that we're working with to build these facilities, but also collaborating with the wider network of agriculture and the learnings from those processes, because that's what we are. We're farmers, just a different animal.
Yeah, really interesting, Megan. Before we run out of time, I'd like to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about your own operation. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Thanks for that. Pine Island Redfish, as I said, is a new recirculating aquaculture development. We've been in business for about a year now. We are culturing redfish, which is a species of drum, Cyanops, that essentially we did what humans do best here in the United States and fished it to the brink of extinction because we liked it so much. And this occurred in the late 80s and early 90s, and we luckily caught it in time and protected the species from commercial harvest at both the state and federal level. And what that did is allowed the stocks to rebound and create a very lucrative sport fishery for us. So it supports ecotourism in a way that we probably wouldn't have today had we not made this choice. But the market demand for the fish never really went away. And it made the U.S. market reliant on a foreign import, which is something that we really need to get away from in terms of our seafood security and supply chain. So that was our focus point. But really what we wanted to do is to address some of those opportunities that we were just discussing, which is one, to show that facility can achieve, you know, a CapEx per kilo in terms of development that's sustainable, that you can still see good return, but also to address how we control waste and proper siting of a land-based facility so that you're working with the environment in the most optimal way. So we currently operate a demonstration scale facility at Moat Aquaculture Park in Sarasota, where we're doing small scale production and housing our brood stock. But even more than that, we have a fully permitted site in our namesake, Pine Island. So just south of here, about an hour and a half off the coast of Cape Coral, where we have a site that we can actually draw seawater through saltwater wells. So we have a very biosecure site in that regard. But even better, we can take that waste stream that we were talking about, that nutrient-rich waste stream. And because it's salty, we have a real opportunity to do some good. And that comes in the form of taking that waste stream and using it as a fertilizer to grow salt-tolerant plants. Our main focus is red mangrove, which is critical both for shoreline stabilization, but also supporting our native fisheries and combating climate change with its carbon sequestration powers. And secondly, there are two species of salt-tolerant vegetables we're focusing on, specifically sea purslane and barilla. And these are some of the most nutrient-dense vegetables we know. Sea purslane has the highest level of omega-3s that we have coming from a vegetable source. And these are all things that can grow successfully in seawater. So in coastal areas where you have salt inundation already, it's a real advantage to maintaining our agricultural roots and still producing a really viable food source.
Oh, wow. That's very interesting information. Thank you. Well, I think we're getting close to the end here, but I did want to give you the opportunity to just speculate a little bit about where you see RAS operations going, say, in the next 10 years or so, and maybe what some of the limitations that you might see on its further development, those type of things.
Well, hopefully for Pine Island Redfish specifically, we are operating our larger scale facility in Pine Island and really exploring and expanding our plant program. But to the larger industry, we really hope to see expanded growth in North America. Certainly Canada is well ahead of the United States in terms of supporting aquaculture. But we really have a lot of education to do about to the public sector through podcasts like these, as well as our news and publications, to talk about the process to get people comfortable and familiar with fish farming so that they feel comfortable in the seafood that's reaching their marketplace. Hopefully in the next 10 years, we can achieve that. And that really comes through expanded operations. So we're hoping to support the identification of viable sites for siting land-based and ocean-based fish farming, but also identifying more key species that are good candidates for the aquaculture process. We've been heavily reliant on salmon for a really long time, but as you well know, there are plenty of other fish in the sea that are amazing and really need to be discovered. We're certainly seeing this surgence of growth in seaweed and shellfish, and we finfish folks shouldn't be left behind. Limitations are probably those that are experienced by all growing industries, permitting and regulation, making that process understandable and streamlined while still maintaining an adequate level of scrutiny is the big challenge, I think. And keeping that process cost effective for both big and small operations so that, you know, we aren't waiting years in between new facilities coming online. Certainly with the seafood deficit we're facing, we better start finding a way to get things set up faster. But likewise, it's a really exciting time for the sector. It's an exciting time for growth. And hopefully, as we see things continue to grow, we will be there to witness all of those new opportunities and be part of them.
Well, thank you very much, Megan. You've really opened our eyes a bit about this new technology, something that's quite exciting in the seafood industry. And we really appreciate your participation in Edible Oceans podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Tony. And thank you for what you're doing to help educate both public and anybody that's interested in what is edible coming out of our oceans.
I'm Edith Wilson-Sousa, the audio and production assistant for the show. I also manage our Instagram, which you can follow us on at @edibleocean_podcast. Professor Tony Winson did the recruiting and the hosting for the interviews. If you'd like to contact him, you can reach him through his website at theindustrialdiet.com. Please remember to rate and review the show on whatever platform you use to listen. It really helps other people find us. And finally, this podcast was made with assistance from the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada.